Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years.
Oh look, it's episode 143 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Womp
womp. Womp 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 womp.
Ooh. I didn't know this, that little musical sting went on any longer.
I didn't either.
you just found it within you.
I did. I just ran with it. Damn it. Jessica Jones season 3.
It did
release.
It's happening. No, I mean, no more is happening, but that at least is a thing.
Yeah, and they knew that there was probably going to be no more going into it, so I'm hoping that they kind of do something with that.
I think that's why the first episode was so action-packed and lightning fast-paced. It's funny actually because I'm now about midway through episode 2,
okay.
and it's like if they knew going in that this was the last season of Jessica Jones, they certainly didn't change their strategy at all.
Well, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, I'm 4 episodes in, and I got to tell you, like, so far this is for me at least as good as the first season.
Oh, nice.
But without. It's not that there's like it's lighter because it certainly isn't, but without the whole terrible Purple Man stuff, like it feels a little bit lighter.
Fair enough.
And as much as like the second season kind of dragged for me, they're playing off of all of the characters' developments, like just all 4 of the main characters at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's good.
I mean, I make a crack about the pacing, but I am actually quite enjoying it. So far, I did not think when I realized that episode 2 was going to be Trish Walker focused, I thought I don't care, but it turns out I do.
Yeah, no, it's actually a lot of fun. I don't know. Like I said, I think the season's going fun places already in episode 4. Like I'm wary of the mid-season Netflix drag.
Right,
but
you never know. I mean it's,
But yeah, no. So far, it's a good time. There's at least one questionable move somewhere in like episode 2 or 3 that just made me go like, "Wait, you did what?"
okay.
That it's never really called out for being strange as it is.
You can tell me.
I'm trying to remember how episode 1 ends.
Episode 1
ends. Make sure that I'm right.
She takes the guy home, whom I think ends up being like a major figure later on in the series, if the trailers are correct. And then she gets stabbed.
Right. Okay. So when she eventually gets back to her place, at some point she's like, you know, okay, because she's injured and all that, she has these pills to take. And one of them says take with food, and she goes and looks in her fridge, and there's the burger. And I'm like, wait a minute. She gets stabbed. Like, her friend, like, rushes to the hospital, blah, 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 blah.
And the guy's like,
and this guy hangs around and makes a burger and leaves it for what has to have been weeks, unwrapped on a plate in the fridge.
that seems a little, yeah.
Yeah. And it's never really mentioned, like, that's a weird choice.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, if there's any flaw, I mean, maybe it's the Marvel Netflix shows as a whole, but every so often I find the show would do stuff like that, make these weird little leaps that just didn't quite make sense, and it just sort of, I found it emblematic of the things that would annoy me of the series overall sort of choices. So why change now? You're in the home stretch.
Right. So, I mean, and again, like, it's a minor thing. It's not a big deal, realistically. But it was just weird enough to catch my eye.
Yeah. Well, I think you should make a 40-minute YouTube video where you just rant at the camera about it, and you'll get lots of hits.
I hear those are popular.
They are very popular. You can call it female SJWs don't know how to eat a burger.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Money.
I think, fame. Fame. It can be
financial
yours.
Success. I am also kind of hoping, and I am kidding here, I'm hoping for is that we get Danny Rand in the season, and
that's right. Bring back Danny Rand.
Just like halfway through the season, it just becomes like Iron Fist season 3.
that would be well, I mean, that would actually be terrible. But I would applaud the filmmakers for their bravery.
Like I knew they wouldn't do it, but like in my like worst case scenario moment after the end of episode 1, I was like, given the last season and blah blah blah, and that they know it at this point, like, what are the chances that like the defenders basically show up in the next episode? And I was like, well, it's not going to happen. But if it did, like, all I know is I want them to like her wake up in the hospital and looks around and there's all of them. And they're like, we're here to defend. Yeah, it's just like that's that's what it's missing. That's what they're leaving out.
That's right. Actually, what I would like is if they just suddenly, for no reason, just switch to Danny Rand trying to build like a model train and just getting really angry, like for like 2 episodes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I, you know.
Yeah. God damn it, he says, as his model train is unsatisfactory.
Oh.
I don't know.
Along the Marvel tip, however, there was also New Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
There was. And I thought it was a highly enjoyable episode. I'm trying to, but it's one of those ones where I'm like, what the hell even happened in that one? Oh,
yeah, it felt like a scene set for the next phase of the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And at least it didn't focus just on one group. They did a little bit of back and forth, but we get sort of a little more more information about what the threat is, what these people are, who, like, you know, what Sarge, the guy with Coulson's face, a little more idea of what he's about. Although I don't know what happened to the other two from the last episode. Like, I think one of them was captured, or at least he got like sort of zonked out in VR. I'm like, are we just not? Are we just ignoring him now? Is that it?
Like, yeah, I think they're just like, well, he's lost to us. Like, that's how they move.
Right.
For now. I don't get it either.
Well, I'd like to know why S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't like interrogating him. This
maybe they are in the back, like, we just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's possible.
Because, you know, we don't see Deke again either yet, so.
True.
I also thought it was interesting when, like, okay, because we hear that, like, they went out with a big crew on the Zephyr, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, because we hear, like, they've lost a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And that they've basically been out of communication, right?
Right.
Okay, so they come back. 2 agents walk out. Daisy walks out. And Max, like, well, where's Fitz and Simmons? No word about, like, the 10 other people who died.
Yeah, that's good. Where are all the other, fuck those people.
Right, just fuck the cannon fodder.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah, that was, that's a good point.
Like, yeah, I was waiting for there to be a thing, and they didn't do a thing.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, you think that S.H.I.E.L.D. is a smart enough show that they would usually remember that, and Mac is a kind of character that would actually care about everyone.
Right, that's the thing, yeah. It's just like, what happened there? Oh, well.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. I did not watch Swamp Thing this week. I watched that second episode, and I was like, I don't care.
Oh, well, I watched Swamp Thing this week.
Yeah.
And, well.
Do you suddenly find yourself caring?
I'm not sure that I do. I think I'm sort of landing where you're landing on Swamp Thing, in which this show's done decently enough, but it's not something I truly care about. And honestly, it's just, there's too much, like, bad TV sort of tropes and junk mixed in. I've, you know,
yeah.
You know, I'm maybe it gets better, but you know, I'll probably keep watching. I'm just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, like part of me is like, well, I already paid for it, you know, like I should.
Right.
But then the rest of me is like, but life is short, and I have other things to do.
This is true. This is true. But I feel like I can spare a television hour every so often for a Swamp Thing. You know, there's some good bits. You get a little more backstory. Will Patton's character, Avery Sunderland, is revealed as being a lot more desperate than we think. Like, he seems like so he's in control of everything, but then you realize he's actually kind of broke, and it's his wife who basically has all the money, and she's cutting him off, and so he's and a guy has been lending him money for the bank, and he's basically said, I don't want to do it, but I think he's dead now. Yeah, and so on and so on. And I kind of like what's his face as Jason Woodrue. I'm enjoying his portrayal. So this will be this should be a
thing. Yeah, at least it, like all the pieces seem good. It's just I just can't make myself care. It just hasn't grabbed me.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Not everything has to.
And Swamp Thing is still terrified and still does not know what's happening to him, according to the little girl.
And, sure.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when I heard that, it was really doubling down on the Gothic nightmare atmosphere, but I'm not really feeling that.
Right.
Yeah, I think even though there's some,
I think a
like,
lot
pretty...
of things claim, I mean, over the years, like how many things have claimed a Gothic horror feel? They never do.
It's kind of true. It's an incredibly difficult tone to nail because, I mean, right. you either sort of, you know, err on one side, like on the Swamp Thing side, it ends up feeling kind of conventional, or it just goes straight into camp. And it's very hard to actually, yeah, Gothic camp horror is about one of the hardest things to get right. So
right, especially across like 10 hours. That's the thing. It's like if they were like, well, it's gonna be like a 2-hour movie, you know, you can nail that and kind of play with the line a little bit and all this, like,
yeah,
sure, but the longer you go with it, the harder it is to keep up. And so anyway, after a little bit of an audio blip, we're back with Gothic horror still being a problem.
It's still a problem. What?
What? They didn't fix that while we were having audio issues?
You'd think they would have heard and gone, well, okay, we got to fix this, guys.
And
they
quick.
Adam and Aiden are upset.
But yeah, so that's Swamp Thing. Like, that's going to be the issue. Like, the whole Blue Beetle thing, like Blue Devil thing, you know, they had, like, they released one picture of him in the final makeup, and it looks like they're going straight to kind of that, like, he's an actual demon version of Blue Devil.
Oh.
Rather than, like, he's a stuntman who gets trapped in the suit. Weirdness that DC used to do. So he looks like,
right.
He, you know, fun. So just, yeah, it's just not my show. And that's fine. Like, it doesn't have to be.
Fair enough. I don't know. When Swamp Thing works, I mean, I really like certain runs of Swamp Thing. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
So, and I was sort of hoping it would recapture that same sort of horror, but so far, not quite. But
no, and I think part of that is just, like, you need an intro. Like, you can't... Like, as much as Alan Moore's stuff, you can kind of read cold, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's a familiarity with the character, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to start from ground zero here, and that's always the worst part of Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's true. And they're not going to get more Swamp Thing, so there you go. One thing I'm curious about is how they're going to... And maybe this is why I'm going to keep watching. I want to see how they're going to develop the romance.
Sure.
Between Swamp Thing and Abby, not because I'm hot to see like Plant Monster and Girl Action, but just because I'm like, how are they gonna make this not silly? Basically.
Right. I mean, you know, if they wanted to do the Doom Patrol thing, it's like you just make it silly, you run with it. But that's not this show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think they did a good job, like in the one, really in that one episode they had together. I thought they did a really good job of like building up like initial chemistry.
Right. But all that changes once he's a plant monster, frankly, and you have to reestablish it in a different way.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't be like, well, you know, we had a drink together and you may be a plant monster now, but let's just pick up where we left off. Isn't gonna, yeah.
In things I have seen, I don't know if you've seen yet. Sorry, there's something else. I saw Always Be My Maybe.
Oh yes, I have seen some of that. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Really? Actually. It is a delightful rom-com.
I know. This is my feel. I was very surprised by seeing most of the criticism I've seen leveled at it is people going, "Well, this is just a rom-com." It's like criticizing Star Wars for like all the spaceships in it.
Right.
Or something.
Like, no, it's one of the better rom-coms I've seen in years, frankly.
Oh yeah, and I really liked Ali Wong and her sort of, and I like the fact that one, like that she's kind of gone somewhere, and then you know, but Randall Park's character has really not.
Yeah.
And I liked everything I saw. I've enjoyed so. So thumbs up.
Uh huh. I will tell you also. Have you gotten to the Keanu bit yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Make sure, like if you're watching on Netflix now, make sure that you hit the watch credits button.
Oh yes,
because there
for
is a
the,
song.
For the song.
Yes,
yes. Best believe I punched Keanu Reeves.
Uh huh.
And it was better than anything that you've seen on Speed. I listened to that song several times.
Okay.
Actually, I heard the song, and that's what persuaded me to watch the film.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I decided to watch it before that broke. Like, everyone's like, oh, here's the song. So I was really glad because I got to just do it.
Yeah. And the best thing is that the band, that Randall Park's band in or group in the movie is called Hello Peril.
Yeah.
Which I mean.
Perfect.
That's pretty sweet. Yep. There's some good stuff in there. Yeah, it's funny because the director is Ninochka Khan, who if you recall from her show Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23,
uh-huh.
I mean, she made hay out of having James Vanderbeek play a douchey version of himself.
Right. It's a so joke that she loves.
Yeah, so as soon as Keanu Reeves walked in and we realized it is Keanu Reeves, not just a guy who looks like Keanu Reeves, I'm like, oh, we're back in this territory. That's excellent.
You know, it's funny because like, I haven't been, when I've been talking to people about it, you know, who are just like, oh, well, Keanu Reeves, and he plays that song. I'm like, yeah. And it didn't echo Don't Trust the Bee for me. It was echoing Extras.
Oh, yes. Very much.
But not in the depressing way of Extras.
Maybe not. Yes, not quite in the depressing way. But yeah, it did hit a similar tone. I mean, I just thought of Don't Trust the Bee because it's the Ninochka Khan.
Right. No, totally.
Connection. I'm like, okay, yeah. And I was like, okay, this is a favorite stomping ground for this director. So, yeah, that was great. And apparently, they had sent the script to Keanu Reeves and. According to Wong, like they said, they didn't even expect to hear back from him. It was like a long shot, and then I guess he responded, and he was like an Ali Wong fan,
huh.
And he wrote that I would be honored to be in your movie. So,
like, I'm just curious right now what their plan B was.
I know. Yeah, it would be
like
they would
they
get,
have
like,
used.
Yeah, because I think they're pretty set on having like an Asian,
right,
or Asian American like movie star. So they would have to find somebody. I mean, they were not going to find another Keanu Reeves, but they were going to find somebody.
Right. And I don't see like, yeah, I don't know who they would have used. I'm just curious. I'm like, what was that plan B? Because I'm willing to bet it would have been also perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it would be weird if like what Chow Yun-Fat. I would love to see that. That would be very strange. But, I'm not sure if there's anybody who could do that particular sort of version of douchebag quite like Keanu Reeves did. You forget, like, just what a... I mean, Bill and Ted, obviously, but you kind of forget just how good a comic actor Keanu Reeves can be.
Oh, no, he's amazing.
Yeah.
When he's allowed to be.
When, yeah, he's one of these actors, he has to be given the right direction, and then he can, and then you just let him go.
He just has to be given the right role, and people seem to forget that he does this, so they just don't think of it.
Yeah, exactly. But him sort of like weeping and apologizing to the deer before he begins to like eat the venison. I thought that was,
yeah,
it was fantastic. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, yeah, that was. And apparently the reason they had Keanu Reeves is because they were trying to think of what would the main character's worst possible nightmare be for, like, you know, for like a boyfriend to compete against, and they came up with, well, it would be Keanu Reeves.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Oh yeah, that was delightful. Also, that like fucking awful restaurant. Oh my god,
that was perfectly, epically great.
Yeah, I mean, I mean the jokes about the rich people were not new, but I still love them. So whatever.
Right. Again, it's a rom-com. Like there are certain marks you want to hit.
Yep.
And they hit them all.
They hit them all. Also, shout out to Ali Wong's glasses, which I thought,
yeah,
looked great. I was, yeah, I was like, whoa, glasses all the way around. Excellent. Anyway, yeah, it was, I mean, and I would say one of the, I mean, people talk about representation and whatnot, but one of the things is when you allow representation, you allow more talent,
right,
into the mainstream, and you get delightful stuff like this.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And so that's, so I'm, so that, I mean, just that on that level makes me pleased. But when it results in something as enjoyable as Always Be My Maybe, it makes me even more pleased.
Yeah. I agree.
So, hey, speaking of super enjoyable things to watch that don't make you feel bad, how are you enjoying Years and Years?
Christ. Yeah, that's a thing.
That's a thing. Yes, this is Russell Davies' new series. Apparently he had this idea when he was doing Torchwood: Children of Men. You know, that very sort of sunny, you know,
yeah,
season
tracks
of Torchwood where all the children were going to be killed, or a tenth of the world's children. Tracks. Anyway, and he had this idea, but he said he didn't want to use it up on like sort of an episode of a season. When he said he thought to himself, what a great idea, I should turn this into an entire series of television.
Sure.
And yep, dystopian fascism, that's the thing.
Why not
so what are you thinking? You've seen three episodes.
I've seen three
so
episodes
far
of the six,
right?
And again, like we've talked with a little bit off recording, but like I like it. Like, it's very, very Davies.
Oh my god, is it ever?
And that makes me happy. But it's that darker end of Davies that just, even when it's not doing something dark, it the darkness looms so much.
Right.
And it works great for things like Doctor Who, because you know that the heroic reversal is coming, right?
Yeah, you've got there's a superhero in the show's pocket. Yes.
Right. And like, that's what made the whole Children of Earth thing in Torchwood so kind of dark, was that you didn't know that. But you still felt like, well, there's still a 95% chance because Torchwood isn't all fuck-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
But like this, there's no light at all. And the deeper we get in, every time you think that there's light, they cut ahead and show you how that's wrong. And it just starts feeling oppressive.
Yep. Well, you ain't seen nothing yet.
And that's the thing. I don't know that I want to.
Yeah, I'm like I say, like I've gotten to the end of episode 5. We've got one more to go. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think the just based on the little next episode clip, it looks like Russell Davies is basically saying there is a superhero in our pocket, and it's us.
Essentially. Sure.
And that's kind of what you're waiting for, and you know it's going to happen in one sense or another, but man, does he ever pull you through some hell to get you there.
I don't know who's doing the music, but...
But could they turn it down a bit?
No, that's not it at all for me, at least. It really is just, there's that kind of like when things are starting to go wrong music, which is kind of, I think it might actually be the exact same music as when we move forward in time.
Yes.
But it's ominous enough that whenever it starts playing and we're not moving forward in time, I'm just like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, it's really well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's I find that the mix is really high. So I like to the point where I'm like, I would like to hear the dialogue, but yeah, but it's like suddenly I hear this like, I don't know how to call it. It's like orchestral speed metal because I've got that double drum thing going on.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh Christ, here comes something terrible. Oh, there it is. There's the terrible thing.
Right.
But I what I really actually am enjoying about the show is every so often, like, characters will do something that sort of takes me back for a moment, but then I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, these are, I think we live in an age in which characters are kind of whittled down to, like, sort of be as direct and clear as possible, and Davies is trying to dig into people in this and show how complicated they can be, show how they can do something very noble at one moment and something very foolish and maybe even kind of evil in the next moment.
Yeah.
But there's the relationship, and this is something you haven't quite seen, the relationship between the grandmother and between Celeste. She's the wife of Stephen, the older son.
Yes.
And they don't, the one that they don't really get along.
Right.
And they're always kind of sniping at each other. But the relationship takes a weird or an interesting turn at some point, and you see that they're not all that they seem to be, that there's more to them, and there's more to their feelings for each other than you imagine.
Nice.
And it's a great moment. It's sad, but it's kind of like a fist pumping moment. Like, yes. Cut out again. Yeah. Oh wait, I'm gone. I'm all gone. Maybe I'll come back.
Oh, sorry. No? You cut out for a second there. But...
Oh, okay, good. Well, I'm back. Okay. I was worried that we were going to have to like do this whole thing all over again. Okay.
Anyway, I just said another.
But yes, but anyway, yes, I was saying it was a fist-bumping moment, even though it was rather sad because this is years and years.
Right.
But I'm you know, and it's, I mean, this is, I don't know how Davies got this, you know, commissioned the show, because it is so grim, and it is such an indictment of right-wing British politics.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why it got through.
Yeah, I think, and the slow rise of Vivian Rooke from this like entrepreneur to like this political nobody to like becoming incredibly powerful, and it's, I rather liked it.
Yeah, I just, again, like, so far, at least in the first three episodes, I keep waiting for it to tie in somehow.
It does.
But yeah, like, at this point, I'm just like, okay, where are we going? Like, I get what we're doing, but it feels like it needs to be closer.
Yeah, it begins to, like, tie in directly to the characters' lives in episode 5.
Okay.
But she's sort of this like threat that kind of is always there, like this sort of dancing sort of clown, like Thatcher as clown, which is kind of perfect for today's age, like this sort of figure that's mostly image, but seems to be, but there's, you know, there's something worse
right.
going on, but and then eventually you realize,
gotcha.
Yes, yeah, there is something
worse. And she's secretly
going on.
Also a sex robot.
Oh, hey, that's hey. Where's, you know, one thing? I don't think we're gonna hear from Keith the sex robot again.
Oh,
I've given up. I've given up on the adventures
of
Keith.
I was just laughing at myself when that happened because, you know, Davies' propensity for in a lot of his shows, and of course, you know, you pin it to Doctor Who because that's a thing.
Yeah.
Where it was always like, you know, the Dalek Doctor push, which he would try to reflect in all the human characters, right? Like, and that's always been his kind of Doctor Who point, I think, is that, you
yes.
know, humanity could go either way, right? Like, we could either find
right.
the beauty and the joy in life that the Doctor has, or we could go down the road of the Daleks.
Yes.
And so I'm applying that to this, like, from, like, partway through episode 1. Like, you can already see it happening. And
mm-hmm.
then we get the sex robot, and I'm like, oh no, like, we're not gonna... This isn't like the rise of the Daleks secretly, is it? Like, this isn't a thing.
Oh, that would be kind of amusing if this was a stealth Doctor Who episode.
Right?
Another Daleks origin story.
It's like in like episode 6, like halfway through you hear the whoom, whoom. I mean, it would just be so funny.
I would actually get a huge kick out of that.
Or like Rook is the master, you know, just fucking do it.
Yeah. Oh shit. Not actually, but yeah, I think there you go. What's it? Is in season 3 when he pops up as the
Prime Minister, right?
Yeah, and yeah, I think this is. Like a lot of creators with like very specific ideas, they're compelled to play them out again and again and again, and you can see a lot of. I mean, there's a lot of things from Torchwood and Doctor Who that are getting sort of repackaged
well,
in a non-sci-fi
again,
version.
Any yeah. writer. I will tell you this, and I'm pretty sure I've said it before here. Every writer has a tick like that. Like, everyone has a thing that they keep writing. And
yeah.
Maybe it's not every single thing that they write, but it is a lot of them.
You're right.
One of the clearest examples I've ever seen is Larry Niven. Every story he ever wrote is about a tourist in some sense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally every story. Like, the Sven stuff, when he's, like, going back in time and all that, he's a tourist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ringworld is tourists. Like, everything
yeah.
he does is about tourists. It's people who end up in a place because they think this is what this destination is, and it isn't. Right?
Right.
That has always been what Niven does. Morrison, for instance, like, Grant Morrison, like, has this obsession with multi-layered reality. The idea of
yes.
fiction becoming real and real becoming fiction and how those intersect.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone has their tick, and like Davy's tick applies to Doctor Who really well. Because
oh,
is
God,
that
yeah.
like, are we going to damn ourselves or save ourselves?
Right.
And he's never been sure. And I mean, who is? But like, that's the thing that drives, I think, all of his stories. So yeah,
yep,
it's that
I,
theme
yeah.
that you keep circling like your entire life and you feel like writers who circle it a lot, like, you know, Morrison, who keeps, and this is reductive, but in a certain sense, he's been telling the same story since Animal Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps getting closer and closer to figuring out how to actually tell it to say what he means.
Yeah.
And, like, my internal joke has always been, if he ever gets it right, he vanishes in a puff of smoke. Because there's nothing left to do, right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, that's how that works. You can never actually get there. And that's what keeps you writing, is you're trying to work out that thing in your head. Whatever that kind of focal point for you is. It's just, it's fascinating to me to like just watch writers over a long enough span of career and you can see it.
Yeah, watch them hone in on that the idea, that like the thing that animates them.
Yeah,
yes.
And like good writers, like they just get it closer and closer with the knife, like every time. You know, Pratchett. Was always just talking about society and how we relate to each other in community in basically all his books. But you look at like the first Discworld book and you look at like the 20th Discworld book and it's the same idea, but he's so much more refined. So yeah
absolutely. So I think looking at Doctor Who, I'd say that Davy's idea, like we said, is are we doctors or Daleks? Is humanity going to save or doom itself? And Moffat's idea is, what is up with women? That's pretty much it.
Yeah, Moffat, yeah. but no, the Davies thing is one of the reasons why I've always wanted someone to realize that Davies should be doing, like, a Superman TV show.
I love that idea so much. That is, yeah, I, yeah.
Just because I think
he
could
that
really
seriously.
Nail it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Give Russell Davies a Superman show, you cowards. speaking of, well, not cowards, but speaking of writers who have a particular set of ideas that they can't help but return to again and again, I've started Neal Stephenson's newest.
Oh, I hate you.
Dodge in Hell. Well, I still respect and love you, Adam. So
no, I just I heard about this book coming out back in December. and I pre-ordered it that day.
Yeah.
And I got it the day it came out, and I'm in the middle of a novel. I can't read fiction prose.
Boo.
It is sitting there until like fall. This is my anger at this, because it's a sequel to Reem D, but it also looks like he's doing some level of Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, and I think characters from Cryptonomicon pop up in it as well.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So I've started it, and the first section, I can tell you without giving anything away, is some of the most deliberately boring stuff that Stevenson has ever written. And it's annoying as hell, because I know he's doing it deliberately.
Huh.
Because he's trying... because it's about, you know, a character who dies and gets, you know,
right,
bloated and blah, blah, blah. So I think in the beginning, he's basically trying to reproduce the mundane ticking of consciousness with his character. And I applaud what he's doing, but it is not fun to read.
Yay.
But I think it doesn't go on for that much longer. I think we're getting 30 pages of this or so.
Oh, okay.
Which
I thought you meant like you were getting like 300 pages of it, and I'm just like,
No. I mean, I hope not. I sincerely hope not.
You know, eventually it just becomes Foster Wallace's book about the tax guy. Like, this is just not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, there we go. It's kind of like the beginning is sort of like The Pale King a little bit. Although not as, a little bit more reader friendly than
not
Wallace
hard, man.
Most sort of. I know. Not hard at all. I actually have not read The Pale King.
The Stevenson stuff, like I've never actually finished the Baroque trilogy, and there are certain books, and that's not one of them actually.
No, neither have I.
There are certain books that I'll keep trying over the years, like every few years I'll pick them up again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did with like Infinite Jest. Like it was like 4 years or so of me trying it every year or so,
right?
Until it clicked, right?
Yeah.
And the Pale King has never fully clicked for me.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, I remember the first time I picked up Infinite Jest, I read the opening couple of pages, and I'm like, "Oh, come the fuck on!" And I just
that's what's funny for me. Yeah. Like Infinite Jest, I got like, I don't remember where I used to bail, but it was way past that. It was like 300-400 pages in.
Okay.
Now my problem is, as much as I adore the book, and I do adore the book, and it's one of those books that, like, if I think about it too hard, I want to read it.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with the book is always the scene with his brother at the award thing.
Oh.
It just derails the entire book for me for some reason. Every time.
Oh man, it's been a while since I've read Infinite Jest. I have to, you know, I should make it a summer project.
It is one of those books. There are certain books like I love to death, and I reread a bunch, and I end up buying a bunch of different editions.
Yeah.
And there aren't that many editions of Infinite Jest. You know, there's the 10th anniversary, which is the one everyone pretty much has at this point, and then did like a 20th anniversary. What pisses me off is that the only edition that is actually the one I want desperately is in German.
Really?
Yeah, because the German publisher did a hardcover of Infinite Jest with two ribbon bookmarks.
Oh!
Yes!
That's how to do that book.
Right!
Jesus
And
Christ.
I'm just like, motherfuckers, get with the program. Why are we not doing this?
Yeah, that would be absolutely the... Yeah. God damn it.
Yep.
Screw you, Germany.
But like, I have like the British edition. Like, I just... Because I just love, like... I love good book design. So like, if it's a book I love and I reread, like, whenever... If I know that there's like a new fun edition out, and I'm like, I want to reread this, I'll often just be like, and that's an excuse to buy a new edition.
Yep. I understand this line of thinking.
So, yeah.
Well, I will report in periodically on
cool
fall or Dodge and Hell, and just to let you know how it's going.
Yeah, I'm hoping, because... And we could talk about this briefly after we finish recording, but the book is being very difficult at the start for a lot of valid reasons. It's a complex weirdness, but I'm hoping that once I get the groove on it fully, that like sometime like late July or something like that, I can actually just be confident enough in the voice that I could pick up this thing. It's a risk.
Oh, sweet.
But
right.
I really wanna. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That sounds good. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. There's oh right. I was gonna talk a little bit about the first ever proper game of Dungeons and Dragons.
Before you
what
do
I played.
Before you do, really, really quickly.
Yes.
The other week we got two episodes of Abby's Place and we were told that those were the last episodes.
Right.
And then this week they aired the last episode.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, but I noticed.
I just wanted to make sure that you knew that it was out there, because I was like,
yeah.
But we weren't getting this. Like, there were still like three episodes that aren't going to air. But we
and
weren't
yet,
supposed to get this one.
But
what's interesting is that this one actually makes for a decent season end. And I wonder if that's why they did it.
Huh.
It kind of does the one thing the show needed to do in its first season to lock down the show.
Oh, man. Okay.
So.
Well, maybe I'll.
Sadly, that was when we cut out yet again. It was not recoverable, so we couldn't patch things together. We will throw to music right now, and we'll be back next week with the surprise of what Aiden was just about to talk about. You'll have to tune in next week and find out.